This is Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Around the corner, ducks down, Ian Bull, and we are all tied at 20.
Looney back to Hub for three.
Got it again!
That's a Big Ten Tournament Championship winner!
From 96.1 WSBT.
The Virginia Cavaliers are the national champions.
Here's Yohe with a steal, gives it up, and Johnson throws it down.
Fires, it's caught, touchdown!
The sports leader.
Allow myself to introduce myself.
Here are your hosts, Darren Pritchett and Sean Stiers.
And we welcome you to a brand new week. A Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on 96.1 WSBT and live on the Sports Beat app. And we continue on with our social distancing. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat from home. Sean Stiers, Darren Pritchett with you. A special shout out to all our first responders out there, all of the individuals that are out front in this COVID-19 pandemic effort. We thank you for what you are doing on a daily basis. And we're here for the next couple of hours to provide everybody a little, hopefully, fun and forgetting about what's going on in our worlds right now. We're just going to sit back and relax, and we're going to talk sports today, and we're going to talk a ton of football today as the countdown is really on now for the National Football League draft, which is coming up on Thursday. The first round will take place Thursday. Then you've got a couple more rounds on Friday, wraps up on Saturday, and the entire NFL draft can be heard on 96.1. WSBT, the sports leader, via ESPN Radio. So when we are done at 7 o'clock on Thursday, the NFL draft will take over on our airwaves, and then Friday Sports Beat, just an hour. And I have a feeling we're going to be very busy Friday in that hour, because I believe that we will be talking about every Notre Dame player being still on the board at that particular time. That's okay. My guess. I don't believe Notre Dame will have a first-round pick. I'm saying Komet and Okwara and the whole crew. Some of those guys will come off in the second round. But just, I spent some time this weekend doing a little research, reading different people's opinions on these players, and looking at mock drafts. So I just have a gut feeling that nobody's going to go in the first round from Notre Dame. What is your gut telling you? Or have you asked your gut yet?
I have asked my gut, and I just, in the back of my mind, I still feel like there is one guy who has a chance to slide up to the first round. I won't reveal it just yet, but okay. I do feel like maybe there's a chance for somebody to get up in there. I think it's still kind of an outside chance, because just going through and looking and re-looking at some of the write-ups on these guys, the strengths, the weaknesses, and the draft reports, and the grades that they've got, and all that. The high end is kind of, the NFL gives these grades, and like 6 to 6.5 should be a starter within 2 years. That's about what Miles Boykin got last year, for example. Well, all of Notre Dame's highest end guys are kind of in that same range. But I supply and demand always kicks in at some point. So,
well,
I'll just
leave
it at that for now.
I've got a couple of things planned later on in the week. We are going to give ourselves a chance to look ridiculous by trying to exactly pick where the Notre Dame guys will go in the draft, the team and the overall number, just for fun. But then a little more reasonable assignment will be, I'm going to set an over-under for a pick for each of the Notre Dame guys, and then you can decide, and I'll decide, will the pick occur sooner or later than what we established. So it's kind of like in the NFL, the over-under win totals. We're going to do over-under pick in the draft. So, for example, I might set Cole Kmet at 42. Will you take the over or the under on that? So we can have some fun with the Notre Dame guys as we roll on this week with the NFL draft. And we are going to make all 32 picks in the first round with our Sports Beat mock draft. We're going to have 5 picks later on this hour, and then 6 through 10 come your way next hour here on WSBT Radio. And also along the way, we'll have the My 5 Question of the Day, and Sean will reveal his top five moments from last night's first two editions of the Michael Jordan documentary on ESPN, The Last Dance. I have them recorded. I have not watched them as of yet. Obviously, to answer this question, you have watched both. And just tease me here, did you enjoy them?
I did. I enjoyed them. I enjoyed the second one more than the first one because it kind of started, you know, get a little bit juicier with more kind of behind the scenes type stuff. The first one, especially the first half hour, it seemed like was more set up. But with no sports going on, I definitely enjoyed the 2 hours that I spent viewing those last night.
I never was a Bulls fan, so I'm still not motivated to watch it. I have it, though, on demand when I ever get to that point where there's nothing else on. But I'm just not to that point as of yet. But from what I understand, I have not heard anyone say they were disappointed.
I was not a Bulls fan, but just the way it worked out, I didn't like the Pistons. I didn't like the Celtics. I didn't like the Knicks. Yeah, I know. Well, I like the Lakers a lot more. I was a Magic guy much more than a Celtics guy. I was predominantly 76ers. Dr. J, when he was still playing, and then kind of that segued a little bit more into and it's not like I owned any Lakers stuff or anything like that, but with those being the predominant games on national TV, I was much more a Lakers guy. So just to kind of segue into that, when Jordan came along, I was, because of those teams in the East that I really didn't care for at all, I always pulled for the Bulls whenever they played them, with the exception of that one finals where they did play the Lakers.
I'm just a loyal guy to Dennis Johnson, Danny Ainge, Robert Parrish, Kevin McHale, Larry Bird, Jerry Sheesting, Greg Kite, ML Carr. That was my team in the 80s.
There was an interesting, and this will make my five, there was an interesting, there's a couple things that tie into that Celtics. I'll just leave it with that. I'll tease. A couple of different things will find their way into that my five later on this hour.
Fair enough. All right, I want to just start with this and just touch on this. I don't know what this means, if at anything, so this goes into the category of take this with a grain of salt. I found this over the weekend. There is a newspaper in Ireland, it's called The Independent, and Health Minister from Ireland, Simon Harris, has signaled schools could be reopened one day a week before the end of the term this summer, but he has ruled out mass gatherings for the foreseeable future, throwing into doubt the prospect of this year's All-Ireland Championships and annual concerts and festivals. I bring that up just because Notre Dame opens their football season in Dublin, Ireland, against Navy on August the 29th. And this is the health minister of Ireland saying that he has ruled out mass gatherings for the foreseeable future. Now, there is not an exact date to when foreseeable future ends, but I thought it was at least worth mentioning that this is a health minister in Ireland saying, hey, I don't think we're going to see a whole lot in terms of festivals, concerts, all those mass gatherings for the foreseeable future. Things can change. You can adjust dates. But I thought it was at least worth pointing out that in Ireland, they're not seeing mass gatherings happening anytime soon, which kind of brings us back to, where in the world could this game be played if it's not going to be played in Ireland? So, again, take it with a grain of salt, but that came from a newspaper in Ireland, and that was the words of the health minister from Ireland.
We have about 3 weeks until that next Notre Dame meeting that Brian Kelly and Jack Swarbrick have talked about, May 15th. I'm sure that they will sort of look at and assess what's going on in Ireland and talk with Navy. I saw it's been a little bit more than a week. The Navy AD was still fairly confident that the game was going to go on, but this sort of signals that, it's, again, there's some distance between now and then, but there's some conversations that are going to need to take place. And like we've said, they're going to, if it's not going to be there and they are able to play it over here on time, they're going to have to figure out what that location is going to look like.
I don't mean to be Debbie Downer, but I saw that, felt like it was worth mentioning. And
it definitely is.
Things will change, and we don't have to worry about what this foreseeable future includes. All right, back to the most important thing this week for sports fans, and that is the National Football League draft, and you've got a handful of Notre Dame players hoping to be taken by an NFL team, and the individuals that are going to be focused on by NFL teams, tight end Cole Kmet, wide receiver Chase Claypool and Chris Finck, running back Tony Jones. You've got a couple of edge guys in Julian Okwara and Khalid Kareem, cornerback Troy Pride, and you've got safeties Aloe Gilman and Jalen Elliott. So a good group of Notre Dame players in the NFL draft. And Chad Reuter, NFL draft analyst for NFL.com, has put out a 7-round mock draft. Trades are included, and there's a bunch of trades in round number one. And if technology works out okay, I think we could see quite a bit of trading come Thursday. I guess they had a trial run of the draft earlier today with the GMs. Apparently early on, it was chaos because many of the GMs were forgetting to hit the mute button on the Zoom conference. And so you had people talking on top of other people, and people were having phone conversations that were going through the Zoom. So I guess it was a bit of a disaster. And I guess the Bengals pick took a little while to get done. But then I guess the way, John Elway, the GM of the Broncos, put it, once time went on, people got the hang of it. And it went okay. If there is technology problems, they'll just put the clock on zero and halt the draft until things get squared away. And looking at some of the GM's basements and stuff, I mean, the IT departments are putting together some impressive rooms. 7-8 TVs, you got computers, cell phones, hard lines, everything you could ever want for a draft, and all these GMs are going to be by themselves. Everybody else is going to be on those Zoom calls or however else they're going to make contact. So this is going to be fascinating. I think the drama of just seeing if everybody can get their picks in might be as dramatic as the actual draft selections. This could get a little interesting from time to time, but you know what? You watch TV, there are foul-ups all the time with technology, so I think we're living at a time now where we don't probably necessarily care that everything is just absolutely perfect, what we see on TV.
I saw John Lynch's setup in San Francisco. I think Eric Hansen retweeted it. My gosh, that thing looks like a TV studio that he's got in his basement, and he's got, you know, like three phones like you would have on your desk at work to make all these. It's like, if he's the only one there, who's going to be using all this stuff? It just looked fantastic. A lot of great work that they've got going into that. The shame of that is if everybody abides by the rules, it's just supposed to be these GMs there, so you can't really rely on IT help the night of the draft. You know, so, but I guess you could still potentially socially distance, and your IT guy could be sitting 10 feet across the room or something, but it's going to be interesting.
Well, I think the challenge is going to be trades. When a team goes on the clock, technically, is it going to be possible for the GMs to connect and talk things over if multiple phone calls are coming in? This is actually a year. I almost wish they'd go back to the longer time on the clock for the first round. I know it's going to drag out the draft a little bit, but I just wonder if it's going to affect trading that takes place. And that's some of the excitement. The 49ers report today they're shopping number 13 and number 31 because they don't have any picks between rounds 2 and 4. So they're going for quantity over quality at this time. So are they going to have time if something happens in the draft to make a trade? So I almost wish they'd go back to 15 minutes on the clock for the first round, because I just wonder if teams are going to be able to get things done as quickly as they want or they could in a normal environment. I would think the guys at the top of the draft, they can kind of work those things out ahead of time. But if you're sitting at 13, 14, 15, you're wondering what's going to happen and will you have time to make those trades? That's the only thing really I'm concerned about with the way this draft is going to be run.
Yeah, I did see where the NFL, because of all the technology and any potential issues, they will be granting extra time if there are, you know, technological type things that are causing any delays in working trades and stuff like that that you're talking about. I don't know what the process is going to be to relay the fact that you're having problems, but I guess they are going to be granting extra time or essentially stopping the clock. that kind of stuff. So I think we're going to have to put an over-under on how many times that's going to happen in the first round this Thursday.
I love the fact that each GM has a direct line to the commissioner. So if all else fails, you can just call the commissioner, and from his home, he'll make the pick. So at least they have that issue covered if there is a problem. All right, so back to Chad Reuter from NFL.com, an NFL draft analyst. We're just going to focus on Notre Dame players, and he has one Notre Dame player going in the first round, and it is edge rusher Julian Okorah at number 31. And Okorah goes to Houston in a trade with the San Francisco 49ers. And Reuter writes, Bill O'Brien, the head coach of Houston, is not afraid to go after or send away players. If he, Okorah, hadn't broken his fibula in November, Okorah would have received much more first-round talk this year. If the medicals are fine, the Texans will view him as a strong and agile edge rusher for the foreseeable future. So that is Chad Reuter, draft analyst for NFL.com, his thoughts on Okorah. I can buy into that to an extent, but also production before that injury was not as good in 2019 as it was in 2018. So to me, that is more significant than the medicals, which are extremely important. But as I mentioned, I think on Friday, if his 2 years of productivity are flipped and he had the big 2019, and even with the injury, I could see him going in the first round. But to me, that's why I believe he'll be a second round pick. I don't believe that productivity is going to be able to offset some of the other really good things that Okorah has to offer coming from that edge rushing position. Still a quality player, but I think the injury and his season last fall will lead him to be a second-round pick rather than a first-round pick.
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying, and we talked about him where if he had more production in the nine games that he was on the field and healthy before the leg break, I don't think it's as much the leg break. I think it's he wasn't producing at a high enough level even before that to warrant this kind of pick. I think the talent is there, and there's still potential, but I think that if the Texans are trading up into the first round to make this pick, I feel like at that spot, it's a bit of a reach.
It was interesting. NFL.com, one of the player profiles put together by NFL analyst Lance Zierlein, here is what he has as a couple of the weaknesses for Okorah. Plays upright and is too easily taken out of the run game. So that's a major factor. And I found this interesting. Yeah. Bullied at the point of attack by the Michigan Wolverines. Not a whole lot went well that night, so add that to the list. And lacks the tools to sink, extend, and anchor as an edge setter. Now, that was kind of startling to me as someone whose job is to get after the quarterback. That doesn't sound like he's got the possibility to be a consistent pass rusher in the National Football League. And he needs to develop a go-to rush counter. So those were some of the weaknesses of a Okorah's game. But I thought it was interesting, bullied at the point of attack by the Michigan Wolverines. They did a lot of running that day.
Right.
That was a run Michigan football team on that rainy night in Ann Arbor. So those are some of the things that this draft analyst found as a weakness for Julian Okorah.
Some of those I guess I could agree, but what you're talking about with Michigan and the run, you're getting Okorah to rush the quarterback. And, I mean, there are guys who aren't going to stand up to the run. He's a speed-type guy. So, you know, I think most teams know what they're getting if they're going to go after a guy like Okorah.
Well, he's got good closing speed, good acceleration, can drop back in coverage. So there's a lot of pluses with Julian Okorah. Yep. Those were some of the weaknesses pointed out by Lance Zierlein of NFL.com. Also in Chad Reuter's mock draft at NFL.com, only one Notre Dame player went in the second round. That was a little bit of a surprise to me. And it was in round number two, the first pick of the second round, tight end Cole Kmet went to the Cincinnati Bengals. And reading some of the analysis of Kmet, one thing that really surprised me this weekend, reading more about Kmet, and I read this in a couple of places, that there is concern about where his blocking ability is at this time. We always define him as a well-rounded tight end, a guy that can catch the football, a really good inline blocker. But it's interesting to see, at least in some of the analysis on Cole Kmet, that's something he's going to have to work on as he gets to the National Football League. Now, let's say that is the truth and not the gospel. To me, Sean, he doesn't have that explosiveness as a tight end dislodged from the line of scrimmage to be a first-round pick just solely on his pass-catching ability. So if, and I say if, this blocking issue is something teams are concerned about, to me there's no doubt he's a second-round pick because he's a really good pass catcher, don't get me wrong, but it's not like he's explosive like the basketball-type players like Antonio Gates
right.
that plays out as a wide receiver and dominates in that fashion. So,
or even Tyler Eifert, for that matter.
Yeah, exactly right. Very good point. So I guess what I'm saying is if this concern about his blocking ability at this time, if that's something teams are looking at, to me that signifies he will be a second-round pick because where's the value in being a first-round pick without that part of the game?
Yeah, he's still considered the top tight end, though, in this group, and even though maybe the blocking needs some work, he's also still considered the most complete package of this group. You know, so I think we're at the point in the draft where we're sitting here just a few days before where you definitely start seeing more of the, okay, now we're really breaking him down and we're going to tell you about, you know, why he shouldn't be a first round guy and that kind of stuff. But maybe that is, to an extent, why we did hear his name more early on as a potential first-round guy, because he is the top tight end, to where he's slid in some places where you see his name even coming up in the third round now. So, but I still think he's the top tight end, and especially in the second round, it's a place where
good value
and the first, yeah, exactly, value. You, there's more value there in the second round, and if you're a team with that kind of need, I don't think you're going to go wrong with Cole Kmet.
Strong hands, has the ability to go up and get the football away from a defender. Once he gets the ball, tough to bring down, a lot of positives. Here were a couple of things that stood out from a weakness standpoint in regard to his blocking ability, again from Zuerlein. Body control and strength as a blocker needs work. Below average instincts and angles as a move blocker. Inefficient and slow getting into block fits. So a lot of that is technical. That can be cleaned up, and that's very important because he is a very, very strong individual. And I think he can become a complete tight end at the National Football League level, but this is the first time I've really seen that pop up after doing a little research on Cole Kmet. Yeah. Now, in this Reuter mock draft, in the third round, two more Irish go. Denver at 77 takes Troy Pride Jr., and the New York Jets at 79 take Chase Claypool. Well, a lot of drafts have a lot of people in different spots, but I think from the Notre Dame player standpoint, Chase Claypool is all over the place, anywhere from 30 to 97 I've seen in mock drafts. Very odd right now, considering he ran a 4.42 at 6'4", 230 pounds. With that athleticism, it's hard to believe he might be, as some people think, between 10 and 12 wide receiver coming off the board Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Yeah, and again, I mean, we've talked about it, and it sounds maybe redundant and cliche at this point, but just the depth at the position, you know, and where are the wide receivers going to go? And, you know, again, if you get into breaking him down and all that kind of stuff, you can, you know, his routes and his
seen
hands.
That.
Yeah, I mean, just a lot of different things. But I look at Miles Boykin had a grade of 6.2, the NFL grade, last year. He went in the third round. So Claypool's is a little bit better at 6.32. So I could see him going anywhere in that range, just depending on who's gone off the board at that point. What are people going after? Are they waiting on the wide receivers because the pool is so deep and going after some other positions that aren't quite as deep into that midway through the second round even?
Well, one thing that has stood out from the Claypool analysis, and Zuerlein says, inconsistent balance out of intermediate breaks, average getting in and out of the break point. To go along with that, I read somewhere else that someone analyzed Claypool as a guy who rounds his routes, which is significant because defensive backs can jump that route and pick off passes. But again, here's the good thing. That's not physical. That is more technique. And that makes you believe that with more work at the National Football League level, that can be fixed. You can't fix a lot of other things when it comes to physical or mental. So we're talking about technique, and that's why I still believe Claypool, to me, is easily a second-round pick in this draft. It just comes down to, with all those good wide receivers, what exactly the measurements you're looking for in your wide receiver.
Yeah, and that's a great point, too, just because the body types of these guys are so different, and his is so unique compared to a lot of these other guys.
I'll read off the last three, and if you want to jump in with any thoughts on these three, in this Reuter mock draft at NFL.com, the fourth round, Baltimore takes edge rusher Khalid Kareem at number 134 overall. In the sixth round, the Packers trade their pick to the Patriots, and New England takes Aloe Gilman, the Irish safety, at 192. And in the seventh round, it is the New York Giants taking safety Jalen Elliott at pick number 218.
Yeah, I can, you know, Khalid Kareem is an interesting one. He seems like one who's maybe slipped a little bit over the last month or two. They break him down, talk about his technical skills, has to be more consistent, kind of some of the things we were talking about with Okwara finding a counter move. Gilman and Elliott in the sixth and seventh rounds, all I can say is if these guys last that long, then I hope my Cowboys jump on one of them because Jeff Heath, they lost him to free agency, and that is a need that they have, and I would love to see one of those guys, Gilman especially, just because of the overall package that he brings back there.
I love Kareem, a guy that's really good at playing the run from that spot. I think he's a very valuable commodity. Maybe his skill set drops him down in the draft. He is not that explosive pass rusher that maybe Okwara can be, but you think about Sheldon Day, someone like that, maybe Kareem can have that type of career in the National Football League. All right, that is, again, Chad Reuter, NFL draft analyst, NFL.com, where he had the Irish players going in his seven-round mock draft, which included trades. Again, Okwara goes in the first round to Houston. Second round, Komet to the Bengals. Third round, Pride to the Broncos. Claypool to the Jets. Fourth round, Kareem to Baltimore. In the sixth round, New England takes Gilman. And in the seventh round, the Giants go with Jalen Elliott. When we come back, we'll go on the clock as we kick off our week-long Weekday Sports Beat NFL Mock Draft. We are going to make 32 picks over the next 3 days, and we will have the first 5 picks in the draft coming up after we take a timeout, plus a Sports Center update. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat brought to you by Budweiser, the Food Bank of Northern Indiana, and Rossini's Pizza on 96.1 WSBT and live on the Sports Beat app. It is 5:38 at WSBT, Sports Beat from home. Sean and Darren with you. Jerry Jadowski producing in our WSBT studios. As I mentioned, the NFL draft Thursday at 7 o'clock on WSBT radio. The next 3 days, we will tackle the first 32 picks of the draft. And pretty simple, since the team I root for, the Broncos, is in the AFC, I will pick for the AFC squads. Sean is a Cowboy fan, so he will be in charge of the NFC, and Sean will be very busy after the first pick, as he will have a bundle full of picks here with the NFC kind of lining up after the Cincinnati Bengals. So I guess the way I'm looking at it, Sean, I'm picking the way I would pick for that team, not necessarily what we're hearing about the teams. So this is just my general opinion on who I would pick if I were in their shoes. And, of course, we're doing this. We're not breaking down the film like all the scouts and the GMs are. So we're just doing this from a fan standpoint. So that's how I'm tackling it.
Okay.
So are you ready
to
go?
I might be a little different with my approach tonight, but I could definitely shift into your approach over the next few days as we continue this.
All right. Very good. So with the first pick in our mock draft, it is the Cincinnati Bengals coming off a 2-14 campaign. Among their needs, a starting quarterback, although they have Andy Dalton under contract for another year, the veteran signal caller out of TCU. And they need help along the offensive line, linebacker, and I would say wide receiver. A.J. Green missed all of last year. They gave him the franchise tag. He's coming back, but he could use a little help. Plus, you just don't know what you're going to get out of him. But you probably need someone to throw the football to those guys. And to me, Sean, when you're picking at the top of the draft, and if you believe there is a franchise quarterback on the board, you have to take him. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. If you don't have a quarterback, you don't have a winning football team. And you can probably get by with Andy Dalton. Bringing in a quarterback's not going to fix everything, but it's a building block. And with the way Joe Burrow saw the field this year, I like the fact he anticipates and understands what defenses are trying to do to him, and that gives him a chance to have some moderate success as a rookie signal caller. So to me, it's an easy decision. You take the best quarterback on the board, and I do believe the Bengals think they have a franchise quarterback in Joe Burrow. So I have the Bengals going with LSU quarterback Joe Burrow with the first overall selection, and I think we both agree, and as do all NFL fans, that that's the way things are going to go Thursday night in round number one.
Absolutely. Shouldn't be any surprise there. It is funny that you mentioned Andy Dalton, that he is still under contract right now, because just because of the way that Joe Burrow is talked about. No one's there's not a whole lot of talk on what's going to happen with Andy Dalton, but maybe we see some draft night move, you know, draft night or draft day, you know, over the course of the 3 days of the draft, where Dalton ends up getting moved. It'll be that'll be one to watch, though. For sure. I think we've talked before about how the fact that there's an abundance of quarterbacks on the market, it seems like, this year.
Sean, he just seems like a guy that anticipates. He's got that knack to see it before it happens, and we know that holds a lot of quarterbacks back. You can have the strongest arm, but if you don't have that football IQ, the ability to understand what's happening, you're not going to have success. And, you know, you think back to Brian Kelly and Mike Denbrock talking about DeShone Kizer. Sometimes he was really slow in pulling the trigger. He would see it but didn't pull the trigger. And we heard that about Wimbush a little bit as well. Well, to me, Burrow's a guy that sees it and pulls the trigger, very good at analyzing what's happening. So I just think he's going to be very difficult for them to pass up.
Yep, I completely agree. All right, picking at number two is the Washington Redskins from the NFC East. They were just 3-13 a year ago, last in the NFC East. And they've, you know, for a 3-13, as you can imagine, a lot of needs that they have. Offensive line, tight end, wide receiver, corner, edge rusher. They've got needs all over the place. And they've got a new head coach as well in Ron Rivera. So he's kind of got some decisions to make as he overhauls this roster. Chase Young, the guy from Ohio State, the defensive end, is pretty much seems like the consensus to go here. Left tackle could also, though, be, you know, a big need, because Trent Williams wants to get traded. Their left tackle that they have, he wants out. But I just ultimately think they're going to go with Chase Young. I think he's the pick. If Burrow wasn't such a logical pick for the Bengals at number one, you know, maybe even the Bengals would be thinking about Chase Young at number one. But Young just seems to make too much sense for the Redskins. He had over 30 sacks in his 3 years at Ohio State, 16 and a half of them last year, helping the Buckeyes make the playoffs. And the other three teams in the East have better quarterbacks than the Redskins as they stand right now. And the Redskins had one of the five worst defenses in the NFL last year. So they've got to get better there. Pressure the quarterback, get that defense better.
Obvious pick there. I think Redskins will go with him. It is interesting to see late in the year his production really went down against Penn State, Michigan. Clemson was not the same guy. Don't know why, but the productivity really slipped against some of the better competition. But you look at the full resume, the dominant pass rusher in this draft, without a doubt, is going to be Chase Young. And I'm with you. That's the route I think the Redskins will go. And you look at the head coach, defensive-minded guy, makes a lot of sense for them to go that route.
Yep, absolutely.
And you're up again.
All right, the Detroit Lions on the clock with the third pick.
Good luck.
Yeah.
You'll do just as good as they will, trust me, if not better.
I know. flip a coin or roll some dice or whatever it happens to be. They were 3-12-1, and of course that tie was week one against Kyler Murray and the Cardinals. And again, they have needs just all over the place. Pretty much their whole offseason, it seems like, has been spent on going out and getting former Patriots. So that's the one thing that'll change this weekend. But they lose the corner, Darius Slay, to Philadelphia. So, I mean, that's been kind of the thing that they've been looking at. Their biggest needs are there at corner, as well as the defensive, basically both lines, defensive line, offensive line. They could use a running back. They could use a wide receiver. It just seems like Jeff Okuda, the fellow Ohio State Buckeye after Chase Young, that's pretty much been the one that everyone's been talking about here at number three. You and I have talked about it. I think this is way too high. If you're not talking about Deion Sanders, that kind of talent, I don't think that number three is the place to be picking a cornerback, because Deion, say what you want about his personality and everything else, he could do a lot of different things for you. And he was a big playmaker, played on a lot of Super Bowl champions between the Cowboys and the 49ers. But I think that as we've talked, there seems to be a growing probability that the Lions are going to trade down. We're not doing that, though, in this draft. So I'm going to go with Jeff Okuda, the corner, at number three for Detroit.
He's got the size and speed, and you read about him. He is just as good in zone coverage as man coverage. And, boy, he's got the ability to jump around. This has got the makings of a longtime Pro Bowl player in the Motor City. So Okuda, another Ohio State player off the board, and you begin to see why now Michigan can't beat him.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, when you're talking about that top talent, you've got the Bosas and Chase Young and Okuda, all these not just first-round picks, but high first-round picks. You know, they'd be lottery picks if you were talking about the NBA, top 10 type guys year in and year out.
Now you get to pick for another one of your team's rivals.
That is very true. The New York Giants sitting here at number four, and they were 4-12, just a shade better than the Redskins last year. They have needs at offensive tackle as well as edge rusher, the secondary, wide receiver, and tight end. They've gone out and got offensive skill guys the last couple of years. They went with Saquon Barkley a couple years ago. They went with Daniel Jones, the Duke quarterback, last year. And I think it would be quite surprising if Dave Gettleman, the general manager, doesn't go out and find a guy to, you know, because they have so many needs on the offensive line. That line has to get better. It's great that you have Saquon Barkley, but you've got to have somebody block for him. And you also have to have somebody protect Daniel Jones. So I would be surprised if they don't go out and get a tackle. I'm going to go here with Louisville tackle, a guy we saw last season, Mekhi Becton, because it seems like everyone out there has a Giants taking a tackle, but each mock has a different guy in this slot. There are about three different guys that you could rotate through. Becton, though, 6'7", 369. He's got the combination of both size and athleticism that I think sets him apart from the other guys who are being considered here in the first round.
Yeah, his athleticism on display at the NFL Combine, dominant run blocker. He has that red flag now. Apparently there was a test that came up positive from the testing before the Combine, and apparently Becton is talking to all the NFL teams about this. So there is a red flag about Becton, but, Sean, you're right. Most people have this guy either first or second off the board in terms of offensive tackle. There is a little buzz about Wills from Alabama and also Werfs from Iowa. But Becton's athleticism, his footwork for a guy 350 is pretty impressive. So if the testing thing works out okay, very good chance Becton could go there. Isaiah Simmons is such a unique player, but I think you got to take care of your young quarterback, and you got Barkley as your running back. You want to do something with the run game, use him more this year compared to last year. That's a pretty good place to start by getting that, hopefully, left tackle they can pencil in for many years to come. Assuming, I guess he's going to be a left tackle in the National Football League. I have not heard anything otherwise.
Yeah, but I mean, especially if the Redskins take Chase Young too, because then you're playing that two times a year. You better be able to protect your quarterback from that.
All right, we'll wrap up this portion of our mock draft. I've got the Miami Dolphins. Miami, after that slow start, actually won five football games. They went 5-11. They need a quarterback. You can't live in Fitzpatrick magic world forever. They need offensive line help. They traded that away. Running back could be a boost. Edge rusher. This just comes down to, do the Dolphins believe Tua is a guy that can be their, not only their franchise quarterback, but stay healthy enough that they can see him past the rookie contract? Herbert is a guy from Oregon that is being kicked around a lot in this particular spot. I know Kuiper, who hears from a lot of individuals, has Herbert going now at number 5 to the Miami Dolphins. If injuries are not a factor, this would not even be a conversation. You would go with Tua Tagovailoa of Alabama and not even think about Herbert. The injury part, you got to factor that in, no doubt about it. But he is a generational talent when healthy, Sean. So my job is not on the line. It's a little easier making this pick. But the Miami Dolphins, I will have them taking Alabama quarterback Tua Tagovailoa. Doesn't have the strongest arm. He's not the fastest guy. But again, understands defenses. He throws the ball accurately down the field, anticipates very, very well. And that has me pretty excited as a Miami Dolphin fan that Tua is going to be flinging the football for my football team, hopefully, for the next 10 years. But it's risky.
Yeah. No, it is. And the health is the biggest thing, because it's not just the hip, but there have been the string with the ankles and stuff like that as well. He has an injury history in college, and that just does concern me quite a bit. I mean, it's not like other quarterbacks haven't had injury concerns. Like Drew Brees once had a shoulder that everyone thought might end his career, but he didn't have that kind of stuff coming with him out of college and into the NFL. So that's a big concern. The talent is definitely there, but I just don't know if I would be willing to pull the trigger on a pick like that, just with the history that he has with the injuries.
If I get fired, I get fired. The pay's not very good anyway. So
there you go.
All right. At 6:40, we will make picks 6 through 10. Chargers, Panthers, Cardinals, Jaguars, and Browns. Coming up at the start of next hour, we're going to be joined by Lester Wilfong Jr., the editor of WindyCityGridiron.com, to focus in on the Chicago Bears, their offseason, and the upcoming NFL draft. My 5 question of the day on The Last Dance, coming up next from 96.1 WSBT, live on the SportsBeat app.
One question, 5 answers. This is the My 5 question of the day on Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Here we go with the My 5 question of the day. Sean and Darren with you. Sean will reveal his top 5 moments from last night's first 2 editions of the Michael Jordan documentary on ESPN, The Last Dance. We start with number 5.
Well, at number 5, we know that Bulls dynasty ended while they were still on top of the championship in 98, but it easily could have lasted at least 2 more years. All the main guys on the team, Jordan, Pippen, the head coach Phil Jackson, they all got along with each other, but none of them got along with the general manager, Jerry Krause. He basically wanted to bust it up after the 97 championship, but they kept it together for another year, won another title, and then they broke it all up after that. Well, I'm sure we'll get to more of this as the series continues, but Krause basically broke the whole thing up because he wanted to prove how smart he was and that he could build another great team after this dynasty. Didn't quite work out that way.
Number four,
2 U.S. presidents were interviewed on camera, but you wouldn't know it by watching the screen. Bill Clinton was cited as the former governor of Arkansas. Barack Obama was tagged former Chicago resident. Those were the chyrons on screen. Interesting.
Top moments from The Last Dance last night. Number 3.
This was crazy. Michael Jordan played golf with Danny Ainge the day before Jordan's 63-point game against the Celtics in the playoffs. There's all this talk today about how players on opposing teams pal around too much, but here are 2 guys, Jordan and Ainge, playing golf in between games. And, you know, I never would have imagined something like that. And Jordan also tells Ainge tell your boy Dennis Johnson I got something for him tomorrow. And so then the next day he dropped 63 on the Celtics. By the way, today's the 34-year anniversary of that 63-point game. After the game, Larry Bird says, that wasn't Michael Jordan out there. That was God disguised as Michael Jordan.
Okay, last dance, moment number two.
Number two is Scottie Pippen and the crazy story that he had. I knew that he played at a small school. What I didn't realize, he was the equipment manager his freshman year at NAIA Central Arkansas. He had to talk his coach into giving him a scholarship when two other players got injured the next year. So he goes from that equipment manager at an NAIA school to the fifth overall pick in the NBA draft and being the second best player on the most iconic team of all time.
Wow. And the number one moment from the first two installments of The Last Dance on ESPN.
Well, you haven't seen this, Darren, but the story of Michael Jordan, his broken foot in his second season. He breaks his foot. He's not really rehabbing, so he goes to back to North Carolina, his alma mater. He gets in the swimming pool, but he starts playing without telling the Bulls. Then he comes back. They find out he's been playing pickup games. Oh. They don't want him to play in real games, and I don't blame him for not wanting to. They were a million games under 500. It just makes more sense. Rest, play for next year, that kind of team. Not risk the long-term injury. But he's so competitive, he talks his way back onto the floor. They have a limit for him, 7 minutes per half, and management threatens to fire the head coach, Stan Albeck, if Jordan goes 1 second over his limit in a game. And so They're playing the Pacers, and they're at the end. There's like 14 seconds left. They have to take him out because of this time limit. They end up winning, and then after the game, they go to the locker rooms. They lock Jerry Krause out of the locker room because they were so mad at him.
That's the My Five. More Sports Beat in a moment. 6 o'clock, WSBT South Bend.
CBS Sports Radio. Sports Flash.
I'm Brett Jackerman. The draft is just 3 days away from starting, which means you can expect a lot of rumors and speculation this week. One thing that seems to be a lock, the first two picks will be Joe Burrow by the Bengals, followed by Chase Young. The Ohio State pass rusher told CBS Sports HQ it would be a dream come true to play for his hometown team.
A lot of people don't get a chance to play, you know, in their hometown, especially on the highest level possible, you know, for football. And, you know, if I go to the Redskins, I'd be a blessing. You know, whatever team I go to would be a blessing. But, you know, I'm just focused on putting my best foot forward to play.
The Redskins had the second pick overall. The Giants are number four, and GM Dave Gettleman has repeatedly said he's open to trading out of the fourth spot. They already have their quarterback of the future, but that apparently isn't preventing them from leaving no stone unturned. NFL Network reports the Giants have met with Oregon's Justin Herbert virtually. ESPN reports the Niners are looking to move one or both of their first-round picks at 13 or 31. They currently don't have a second, third, or fourth-round pick. Jets GM Joe Douglas said he hopes to connect with Pro Bowl safety Jamal Adams after the draft, and that he hopes to keep Adams as a Jet for a long time. However, he also left the door open slightly.
The plan would be for Jamal to be, you know, to be here long term. And again, I've also made it known that I have to do what's in the best interest of this team. And if other teams call to talk about players, I'll listen.
Marlins CEO Derek Jeter is reportedly foregoing his salary during this pandemic. I'm Rich Ackerman.
DA here coming up tomorrow morning. How about Pro Football Hall of Fame running back Franco Harris? It's also a Trash Tuesday. The DA Show, 6 Eastern.
CBS Sports Radio. Welcome back to another hour of Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Touchdown Notre Dame! 70 yards, Bork to Lindsey.
He gets it out to Leshesky for three.
Got it! He got it!
Caught for the win! Kyle Rudolph!
From 96.1 WSBT.
Justin Fisher heading for the touchdown, his sixth of the night.
The Washington Nationals are World Series champions.
And that's a South Bend Cub Midwest League championship winner.
And the kick is good for the win. Pinheiro with a narrow kick.
The sports leader.
And look who's coming up.
Here are your hosts, Darren Pritchett and Sean Stiers.
Hour number two for this Monday, April the 20th of 2020. Sports Beat from our home, Sean Stiers, Darren Pritchett with you. Great to have you with us. Hope you had a great weekend. Beautiful day here in South Bend. If you're listening on the Sports Beat app all across the country, hopefully you had beautiful sunshine like we had today in South Bend. Once again, the NFL draft coming up on Thursday. All of the action right here on WSBT Radio. We'll join ESPN Radio for the first round after our program Thursday at 7 o'clock. Sean and Darren with you. Let's talk some Chicago Bears football. Lester Wilfong, editor-in-chief of WindyCityGridiron.com, joins us on WSBT Radio. Lester, it's Darren. Great to be with you on this Monday evening. How are you?
Thanks, guys. How are you guys doing today?
Doing very well. Good. Thank you so much. Before we get into the draft, let's kind of pick up on one of the major storylines in the offseason, Lester, and that is the Chicago Bears acquiring Nick Foles to go along with Mitchell Trubisky. Do you truly believe, like the Bears are talking, this will be a true competition once practice gets underway? And then part two is, who do you believe ultimately will get the first shot in week one?
I think it's an open competition to a point. I think heading in, since Trubisky's the incumbent, I think he'll be the number one starting camp. But once camp starts going, Nick Foles, his grasp of the offense, his understanding of NFL defenses, I think will kind of overtake Trubisky at some point. And I think when it gets down to it, week one, it's going to be Nick Foles starting for the Bears.
Well, so I guess along those lines, the comments from Trubisky's former teammate, Cal Long, last week kind of seems to say that this is it for Mitch Trubisky in Chicago. Do you think that it's, you know, a make or break year for him, or do you think he's it's, you know, the handwriting's on the wall and he's pretty much done already?
Yeah, I think obviously he'll have this year, unless a draft day trade, which I'm not sure will happen. Things have to go really right in order for them to make a trade on draft day for Trubisky. But I think if this year is his last year in the contract, I can't see him picking up a 5th-year option. So, I mean, the best-case scenario for the Bears would be for him to really have it all figured out. I mean, he's younger. He has a much better arm. He's much more athletic than Foles. You know, it would be the best-case scenario for the Bears for him to get it and figure it out. But ultimately, it's on him. If he does have a great year, then you franchise tag him. You get him for the 5th-year anyway. So the price there is not a big of a difference between the franchise tag and the 5th-year option. So, you know, they're going to let the chips fall where they may, but ultimately, I think I agree with Kyle Long, and I think it's going to be his last year in Chicago.
For people that aren't familiar with Windy City Gridiron, it's a part of the SB Nation family, so go to WindyCityGridiron.com for Bears information on SB Nation. And I was looking today, Lester, at the website, and you had the opportunity to ask some opinions to the guys at NBC Sports Chicago, what the Bears might do in the second round. Obviously, they don't have a first-round pick, so they have the opportunity to pick for the first time at number 43 and again at number 50. Another two-part question for you. First off, since we're talking about quarterbacks, how important is it for the Bears to take a young quarterback in this draft? And number two, one of the guys that you asked the opinion of had the Bears at 50 taking Jalen Hurts, the quarterback from Oklahoma, formerly of Alabama. Do you see a fit there at all?
You know, I think with Jalen Hurts, I think he's going to be a good pro. I think if the Bears do take quarterback early, it's going to have to be a guy like Jalen Hurts. I don't see him lasting until the Bears kick again back in the 5th round. So unless they trade back and acquire some picks there, like in the later in the 2nd or in the 3rd, I think if they want a guy like Hurts, you got to get him there in the 2nd. And I think he is a good fit for the Bears. I mean, he's a guy that has won, you know, at both stops in college. You know, he has all the athletic traits. He has a really live arm. You know, I think he'll be a good pro eventually. He just may need a year to sit. But if the Bears are going to go all in on a guy that early in the draft, then I think then they may look to explore trading Trubisky, because I can't see him having, you know, Trubisky, Foles, and a guy as highly touted as Hurts on the roster.
Well, and when you look at the fact that they don't have a first-round pick, then they have the 2 in the 2nd round, but then they don't have anything again to the 5th. So, you know, where could they get the most impact, I guess, with those 43, with pick number 43 and then pick number 50 as well?
Yeah, I think with Ryan Pace, we've seen him, you know, throughout his history in Chicago, he's been a best player available guy. Yeah, there's been a few times where he's been, you know, a fix on a guy with Trubisky, obviously with Leonard Floyd, another guy he moved up to get in the draft. But for the most part, he pretty much stays best player available. And in that case, you know, the Bears are looking at that at 43 and 50. You're looking at some safeties, you're looking at some guards, possibly an offensive tackle if he slips on the board. I mean, there's going to be a lot of quality players the Bears can pick up there. And even a couple of guys from Notre Dame could be there for the Bears.
And just to build on that, Lester Wilfong Jr. from WindyCityGridiron.com is our guest. Trey Burton, tight end, was released a few days ago. Does that signify that the Bears are interested in another tight end coming up in the draft, or do you believe Jimmy Graham will be okay for the time being until they can possibly find another guy down the line?
I think a little bit of both. I think if the right guy is there for them when the board falls, I think they will take a tight end. But ultimately, I think they do believe in Jimmy Graham. I think they think Jimmy Graham was not used properly. I don't want to say not used properly in Green Bay, but that's an offense that doesn't really feature the tight end very much. I mean, it's the Rams offense with Sean McVay. You know, there's not really a tight end that's been in that system that has really flourished. You know, it's more based on the running back and the receivers getting the ball. So I think the Bears think Jimmy Graham has some better football in front of him. But on the same token, if a guy is there in the draft, like Kmet, if they feel that he's up their board and he's there for him at 43 or 50, you know, maybe they pull the trigger and get a guy like that.
Well, and Allen Robinson is their number one receiver, and that's another, I think, at least potential need. What do you think about a wide receiver there in the second round, and as well as any thoughts on what you've seen from Chase Claypool?
Yeah, that's another spot receiver. I mean, the Bears, you know, they got rid of Taylor Gabriel, who was their main speed threat there. So there is an opening there for a guy if they want to bring a guy in. And this draft is pretty heavy with the wideouts. I mean, you can get a guy like KJ Hamler. I'm in the second round. You mentioned Claypool, who's really another speed guy there. So that's definitely a spot you want to look into. A guy like Jalen Reagor from TCU, you know, a guy that has the speed to stretch a defense, a guy that would fit and complement what they have right now in Allen Robinson and Anthony Miller. A speed guy would fit in right there either at 43 or 50.
Well, Lester, I tell you what, around these parts and across the country, Notre Dame fans, they would probably like a bronze statue of Harry Hiestand for the work he did with offensive linemen at Notre Dame. It didn't work out with the Chicago Bears. Do you have the sense that the parts are there for this offensive line to be better in 2020? And do you put much of the blame on Hiestand? I see an offense that didn't rely on the running game a whole lot last year. That probably didn't help much at all either with the way that offense works.
Yeah, I think Hiestand kind of got caught up in the Bears just didn't have a very good overall running scheme. I know that the way it was, like, the narrative's out that kind of he had something to do with that. You know, I'm not sure. I mean, this is a very well-respected offensive line coach. I mean, he was in Chicago before. You know, his old players, you know, they swear by him. The players he had at Notre Dame and at Tennessee, they all swear by him. So I'm not sure if he was much the problem. It may have just been a schematic mismatch with him and Matt Nagy. So they decided to part ways. I think, you know, with Coach Hiestand, he'll be okay wherever he ends up. I think the pieces are there for the Bears. You know, if you look at 2 years ago, you know, going into the offseason, you figured the offensive line was one of the Bears' strengths. They had Charles Leno and Whitehair both made the Pro Bowl. Bobby Mackey on the right side is a serviceable right tackle. Young James Daniels was solid there. So I think they thought they had enough pieces in place. But this year, like you said, the lack of running game kind of hurt the overall scheme of things, and the O-line really suffered.
Lester, this is going to be Ryan Pace's sixth draft with the Bears, and his results have been kind of mixed, probably more mixed in the first round, but of course they don't have any first round picks this year. What in general do you think of the way Ryan Pace has drafted in his first 5 years?
You know, it's a quarterback driven league, and the fact that he got the quarterback spot wrong really hurts what he did here. I mean, if you look at his overall hit rate has been pretty good. I mean, he's had more hits and misses than a lot of guys in the league. But it all comes down to the quarterback and the fact that he really banked on Mitch Trubisky being the man. It didn't work out. I mean, yeah, it could still happen this year, but it hasn't yet. So the fact that he took him over guys like, you know, the guys that are there, Pat Mahomes and Deshaun Watson, that really hurts his overall grade.
He is never going to outlive that, no matter what he does in the draft for many, many years to come. Lester, as we know, when the Bears are elite, that means they have one of the best defenses in the National Football League. How close are they to returning to that level that they had 2 years ago?
You know, the difference between 2 years ago and last year, I mean, from the DVOA metric, you know, the Bears still had a top five defense. You know, I think they were top three in points allowed this last season. You know, they're missing the turnovers. They're missing the sacks. Part of that was due to injury. Part of it was due to the offense being so broken last year where it couldn't, you know, they couldn't have any sustained drive. That really hurt the defense overall. I think if the offense is more competent, and it should be this year with Nick Foles, they stay on the field a little bit more. It keeps that defense fresh, and I think the defense will bounce back and get closer to what they were in 2018.
You know, Lester, when I look at a team going into the draft, I kind of look at, are they drafting overall more for the short term, for this year, or is it more a long-term approach? And when I look at the Bears, it seems a little bit split. What do you think of where they are right now?
I think the Bears felt that they were going all in when they made the trade for Khalil Mack. So I think Ryan Pace thought his roster was ready to win then. And the Bears were pretty good in 2018. You know, they were 12-4. They went to the playoffs. And then it all fell off last year. So I think Ryan Pace thinks his roster is still pretty solid. I think he has a really good defense. And again, I think it's all about the quarterback. He thinks if the quarterback is good, you know, this offense should be back, you know, a much closer to what it was a couple of years ago and get this team back in the playoffs. And with that being said, I think they're going to draft more for impact players this year. They may trade back a little bit off one of those second-round picks. But I think the plan is to come away with two impact players with the first two picks because they feel this is a win-now roster.
Lester, my final question for you. When you take a look at the NFC North pre-NFL draft, how would you rank the four football teams since free agency is all but over at this point?
It's hard to go against the Packers because they have Aaron Rodgers at quarterback. You know, I think last year they had a lot of really close games. They kind of overachieved a little bit. So they should take a step back this season. But again, they have Aaron Rodgers. He's still one of the best quarterbacks in the game today. So I think he's still got to put the Packers number one until his team comes up and beats him. And then the Vikings, another really talented roster. I think the Vikings and the Bears are kind of in the same mix there. And then the Lions, I really like what they've done the last few years in the draft, but it hasn't really translated to wins. But, you know, that's a team that's due. So, I mean, I think it's a tough division top to bottom. But I think until proven otherwise, you got to still rank it Packers, Vikings, Bears, Lions.
Wow. So based on what you're saying right there, if Nick Foles is your starting quarterback, are they at least in the conversation to be a playoff team at the end of the season?
Yeah, I think if Foles can play like he's shown in the past in this system, and he's done it, you know, in Philadelphia, he did it for a few games in KC a few years ago. You know, he has had success in the system. You know, he believes in himself in the system. He basically banked on himself the way he redid his contract. You know, he redid his contract because he really thinks he's going to be the man this year in Chicago. He feels there's another big payday coming for him down the road. So if everything works out like the Bears and Nick Foles expect, I think this team will be back in the playoff mix. And if that's the case, they should be there. But again, if we're just going off base off right now, it's hard to overtake the Packers just because, you know, Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
Lester, for Bears fans and our listening audience looking for some information on the Bears this week, what are they going to find at WindyCityGridiron.com?
We got a few more mock drafts coming up. Our lead draft analyst, Jacob Infante, just dropped his top 150 big board. We got a few podcasts coming up, previews. Just this whole week, all through next week, going to be all drafts all the time.
Very good. Lester Wilfong, Jr., editor-in-chief of WindyCityGridiron.com, part of the SB Nation family. Lester, good to catch up with you today. Greatly appreciate your time, and hopefully we can talk again soon.
Sounds good, fellas. Anytime.
Thank you so much. Lester Wilfong, Jr., editor-in-chief, WindyCityGridiron.com. You mentioned Jacob Infante's big board, just taking a look at that right now. And as we talked about last hour, Chase Young, number one player on the board with Joe Burrow second. What I found interesting, he has Jerry Jeudy, the Alabama wide receiver, coming in at number three. And as I quickly go down the list here, looking for Cole Kmet, he comes in at number 45 overall. And as I go down the list a little further, Chase Claypool comes in at number 62 on the big board. Our thanks to Lester Wilfong Jr. for joining us here on WSBT Radio. And you can hear Chicago Bears football once again this fall on our sister station, Z94.3 FM. Coming up next, Rapid Fire as SportsBeat rolls on 621 at 96.1 WSBT and live on the SportsBeat app.
Rapid Fire starts now on Budweiser's weekday Sports Beat on 96.1 WSBT. Here is Sean Stiers and Darren Pritchett.
Well, Darren, we'll start with The Last Dance. The overnight ratings in today, 6.1 million viewers for episodes 1 and 2 over ESPN and ESPN2 last night. It is the most watched documentary in ESPN history. Just night one last night for single viewership, you know, when it was live and everything. So
okay.
The ratings notwithstanding, just with the debut of the documentary last night in mind, is there another sports figure who could command the kind of attention this is getting 20 plus years down the road after they were done retiring? This can be past, present, future, however you want to look at this.
You bet there is, because every time he's on TV, it moves the needle, ratings go up, people coming to the event he is involved in goes up significantly, and he has impacted his sport more than anybody else recently, because the amount of money the people are playing for now has grown enormously because of his enormous popularity, and that is one Eldrick Tiger Woods.
Oh, I hadn't even thought about Tiger Woods. That's an interesting one, especially just with the things that have gone on in his, you know, the
being,
I guess,
by
the
a
dark
seven iron
chapter. Yeah, that's right. I mean, there was a lot of stuff. That's actually a really good one that I hadn't considered. I think you're right. I would agree with that one as well. And I mean, I was thinking, you know, sort of more the traditional team sports, I guess,
LeBron,
and everyone today talking about LeBron. And I wish that we didn't have to get into that right away. Just
can't stand
like
it.
You look at Twitter, and that's all everyone wanted to talk about.
Why can't we enjoy both? That's what I've said for years. Why can't we just enjoy both?
I know.
They're and different it, players.
Yeah, exactly. Different players, different periods that they're playing in. And LeBron, even, it's like, would we really find anything out about LeBron 20 years from now that we probably don't know now because of social media and the shows that he's already done on TV and all that kind of stuff? I'm not sure, you know. But Tiger Woods is a really good one. The one that I went to is, and it would probably have to be a combination, the Brady-Belichick combo. And there's some parallel in New England with things breaking up before it had to. I mentioned in the My Five earlier that they broke it up in Chicago. Really, they could have, if they wanted to, they all could have worked together a little bit better and worked out some contracts that it didn't all have to come to an end with Phil Jackson, Michael Jordan, and Scottie Pippen all saying sayonara after this, and with Brady leaving, and just the things that have gone on behind the scenes there in New England that we've never fully got to see, the dynamic. Like right now we're talking about the Krause dynamic with Jackson and Pippen and Jordan, and just the back and forth between Brady, and just as sort of secretive and private as they have been about a lot of things. I think that would be an interesting one as well.
It would be interesting, but I think they are so disliked, I don't know how popular the series would be. Maybe after 20 years, time heals, but boy, there's just so much negativity with all the cheating that's gone on. Belichick's press conferences, they're just not very likable.
But that sells too. You know,
it does.
That sells too. The controversy sells as well. And like, if you found someone, if Brady was going to come out in this documentary and talk about Spygate, like, yeah, we did that, you know, that would be, and you knew that there was going to be some of that would be interesting. Or if Belichick was going to come out and say, yeah, Brady was inflating those balls, I mean, you know, like if you had people sort of pointing fingers and all that kind of stuff 20 years down the line, I think it would. But I like your I like your Tiger one for sure. I think that's a really good one that I hadn't even considered. Fill in the blank on this next one. The NFL conducted a practice virtual two-round draft today, and that's blank.
Well, I think it was necessary just so the GMs would have a feel how in the world this was all going to work, and plus they all learn what the mute button is all about. You need to hit the mute button so not everybody is talking all over each other. Come on, guys.
Oh, my gosh.
They can break down film, they can find the next superstar, but they don't understand the mute button.
They need to bring their grandkids into their high-tech rooms and let their grandkids sit there and push the buttons. And I guess there were bandwidth issues with the internet, and we talked earlier about the glitch with the Cincinnati Bengals pick. And the mute button was one of the first things that I thought about when they said that they were going to do this draft, and that happened right off the bat. And I guess John Elway, there was a story on ESPN where Elway said, after that kind of initial sort of shock and awe where everything went bad, they did iron some things out. So I guess it's good that they did a test run today. Maybe they need to go through and do another test run tomorrow. I mean, I am still curious to see Thursday night if we see some GMs who don't hit the mute button and kind of how some of those things go. But sounded like a train wreck today. Hopefully they've got some things ironed out and things will be back on track when this actually hits the air Thursday. Mm-hmm. All right. Reports on the actual score vary, but Tua Tagovailoa reportedly scored very low on his Wonderlic test. Former NFL executive Gil Brandt says he thinks reporting a player's intelligence score should be off limits. Do you buy or sell that?
I would have to think that's private information. It's not like colleges send out information that quarterback so-and-so had a 3.8 grade point average this year. I just think there are some things that we really don't need to know about, and the bottom line is there's probably a lot of great football players that tested low on that and some awesome Wonderlic test players that ended up being horrible NFL players. So
yeah,
I'm not necessarily even that fond of them conducting this particular test because there's probably some guys that tested probably lower than you or I would have on that test, but that doesn't mean that we're going to be a better football player in the NFL.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it depends on what position you probably play. I think more weight is put on it for the quarterbacks because you're saying that a quarterback essentially has to be more intelligent because of the processing of information and everything he has to do with the line of scrimmage on every play. But Richard Sherman was tweeting that players don't care about the Wonderlic. They don't take it seriously, so the results of it don't matter, and I could see that. I wonder how much more are you really going to find out about a player when he takes this test compared to just sitting down with them and interviewing them and talking with them to get their feel for what they know about football and everything else. So to the question, Gil Brandt saying that reporting this stuff should be off limits. From the perspective of the reporter, the guy whoever's reporting it, I think it's fair game. Because if there's information out there on a prospect that a reporter can get verified and access to, I think it's completely fair game for them to report it. As far as do they actually need to administer these Wonderlic tests every year, I agree with you. I don't think that they really need to. I think that these things have probably passed their purpose. And again, I think that you can find out more just by sitting down and talking with these guys or saying, here's a play, diagram it through me. Tell me what you're going through. Any of that kind of stuff, I think serves a heck of a lot more purpose than a general test like this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Last question for tonight. Notre Dame basketball last week, their Twitter account did one of these. You have the players, they gave you five different ranges of players. You had a $5 range, a $4 range, $3, $2, $1. And then you come up with, you've got a salary cap of $15, and you've got to come up with your five. So we're gonna on our budget come up with a team of five Notre Dame basketball players on a budget of $15. So here's the $5 line. You've got Ryan Humphrey, Troy Murphy, Luke Herangode, Chris Thomas, and Ben Hansbrough. In the $4 line, you've got Bonzi Colson, Demetrius Jackson, John Mooney, Nick Carroll, Jaren Grant. On the $3 line, Colin Falls, Kyle McElarney, Matt Farrell, Chris Quinn, and Pat Connaughton. On the $2 line, Eric Atkins, Jack Cooley, Tim Abramidis, Zach August, Torrey Jackson. And then the $1 line, Rex Pfluger, VJ Beachum, Steve Vistoria, TJ Gibbs, Taryn Francis. And again, you've got to come up with five players on a budget of $15. So, Darren, what is your five?
First off, Pat Connaughton on the $3 line.
Yeah, come on. He complained about that too.
Wow.
I agree.
In fact, when I saw this, I wrote down what I would consider the $5 line. Here's who I would have: Murphy, Connaughton, Colson, Humphrey, and Grant. And so that means I have pretty much only two of the top five on the list. I mean, I would take Colson over Herangode, Thomas, and Hansbrough. I would take Grant over them, and I would definitely take Connaughton over them. So that was my $5 line. And then my $4 line was Hansbrough, Herangode, Thomas, Mooney, and Carroll. So just for fun, I moved a lot of people around. I moved DJ down to the $3 line, which was tough to do. And I moved Abramidis from $2 to $3. I mean, that's an undervalue. But I'm going to play by the rules given. I've done my complaining. I just went the easy way and went with one pick from each line. I know you don't have to do that. I'm going to go with an All-American player in the $5 line in Troy Murphy. I'm going to take his offense and his rebounding skill. He's a mismatch problem. So that was very easy going with Murphy there. The $4 line, I went with Jaren Grant. And I was a huge Matt Carroll fan when he was here. Mooney, my gosh, it's hard to pass up the double-doubles. But Jaren Grant was a guy to me that probably is a little undervalued in the Notre Dame circles. A part of that Elite Eight team in 2015. I love the playmaking ability of Jaren Grant. So that was my $4 pick. $3, the value of the century. Pat Connaughton, give me Pat Connaughton. Don't even think about the other guys.
Oh, show.
Yeah, number two, again, an undervalue. Tim Abramidis was an easy choice. He can help with some defensive help down low on my team. So I went with Abro with his offensive skills as well. And then the glue guy in the dollar line, another guy kind of gets lost in the shuffle in that 15 team, and that is Steve Vastoria. So I've got Murphy, Grant, Connaughton, Abramidis, Vastoria. So you see I'm a little biased toward that 2015 team getting those three guys back together.
Well, first, I didn't even realize that, you know, if you went 5-4-3-2-1, that's $15 right there. I didn't even look and realize that. You're right. You could just take a guy off each line. But I'm even more leaning toward that 2015 team.
Good.
Because if you take the starting lineup for the 2015 team that won the ACC championship and the Elite Eight, Pat Connaughton, $3, Zach August, $2, Demetrius Jackson and Jaren Grant each for $4, Steve Vistoria, $1, the best team in at least the last 40 years of Notre Dame basketball, 2015, you get the starting five for $14. So how can you go wrong just with taking the starting lineup from the ACC and Elite Eight team in 2015? That's what I went with.
Okay, I like that. So you took no one from the $5 line.
No, I didn't. I went, you know, kind of bargain hunting, I guess, all the way through. I stayed off the $5 line and just went with the starting lineup from that 15 team, and I got them all under budget for $14.
Just for fun, if you could pick one, who would you rather have, Ryan Humphrey or Luke Herangode?
Humphrey or Herangode.
I'm going Humphrey.
That's tough. I think I would
defense.
Yep, I think I would go that way as well. That's tough.
Would you take Hansbrough or Grant?
Oof. Another tough one. I think I would go with Jaren Grant, though.
I would, too. Yeah, I would, too.
Curious. I like his versatility and the fact that he kind of had a deceptive, like, six assists a game his last year, that 2015 season, and just everything that he could do, I would go with Jaren Grant.
Fair enough. That was a fun exercise that Notre Dame basketball put out there, and I think they may have lost a donation this year from Pat Connaughton for being put on the $3 line. He was not happy. I don't blame him. Holy cow. That's like putting Newt on the $3 line for coaches at Notre Dame. Come on now. All right. That was fun, though. That was a really fun exercise. We'll come back. We'll continue on with our SportsBeat NFL mock draft pick 6 through 10 next from 96.1 WSBT and live on the SportsBeat app. Sean and Darren with you. Jerry Janowski producing in our WSBT studios. It's time for part two of our SportsBeat NFL mock draft. We held the first five picks in the first hour of the program. The Bengals went with quarterback Joe Burrow. Redskins, defensive end Chase Young. Lions, Jeff Okuda, the cornerback from Ohio State. The Giants go with offensive tackle from Louisville, Mecca Becton. And the Dolphins go with quarterback Tua Tagovailoa from Alabama. So now we move along. I'm picking AFC teams. Sean is picking NFC teams. Up next, the Los Angeles Chargers at number 6, a record of 5-11. Phillip Rivers now in Indianapolis. Quarterback is on the list. They need an offensive tackle bad. Their line was brutal last year. Linebacker and an edge rusher of the future. Bosa and Engram will become free agents in a couple of years, so you can start looking ahead to replacing probably one of those two. It'll be difficult to sign both of them. Now, all the mocks have them taking a quarterback, and I understand that. Many have Tua going there after Herbert goes to Miami. In our draft, Tua went 5. I do not believe Justin Herbert is a franchise quarterback. I don't believe he's one of the best 20 players in this draft. Again, I'm picking my opinion, not who the mockers are saying. Okay. So I'm not taking a quarterback here. I do not believe he's worthy of the 6th pick. If I had the chance to trade this pick, I would drop back in the first round. But I've got to make a pick. And even though it's not a sexy pick, I'm going to go with Jedrick Wills, the offensive tackle from Alabama, played right tackle with the Crimson Tide, has the ability to play left tackle. So as you start rebuilding that Chargers franchise, I'm going to get an offensive tackle to settle down that mediocre offensive line, and I will leave Justin Herbert to somebody else.
All right. Sounds good. Interesting. So and I think that was kind of the question. What would the Chargers do if Tua was gone? They both seem to be in the mix for him there, and I'm not going to be surprised if you see the Chargers actually trading up on draft night Thursday to maybe try to get Tua. We shall see. So you're going left tackle. Okay.
I would still drop back to try to get Wills later, but again, we can't trade, so I'm taking the best player available, which matches the need.
Yep. Okay. So I've got the Carolina Panthers at number 7. And they are coming off a 5-11 campaign, and they have a new head coach, Matt Rhule, coming over from the college ranks at Baylor, and he inherits a team that has a lot of needs. Defensive line is one of the big ones. Cornerback is big ones. Edge rusher, offensive line, linebacker. Those are the top ones, and I mean, he's got a lot of glaring voids to fill on a defense that's replacing most of its starters from last year. They need some starting caliber players at every level on the defense. So I'm going to start up front in the trenches. They, again, a lot of holes to fill, but I'm going to go with Auburn defensive lineman Derrick Brown. He is just a monster at 6'5", 326 pounds, a big physical guy who can get to the quarterback as well as stop the run. There are some people who say he's had the best year of any interior defensive lineman since Ndamukong Suh at Nebraska. 23 tackles for loss over the last two seasons. So I'm going with big man up front, Auburn defensive lineman Derrick Brown.
That makes a lot of sense when you think about the quarterbacks in their division, Ryan, Brady, and Breeze. What's the one thing that irritates any great quarterback or any mediocre quarterback? Pressure up the middle. And absolutely, Derrick Brown from the interior of the Panthers defensive line can sure do that. So I think that's a perfect fit.
All right. So that's a big defender going up front at number 7 for the Carolina Panthers. Now I've got the number 8 pick with the Arizona Cardinals, who were 5, 10, and one last year. And their biggest needs, offensive line and edge rusher. Those seem to be the two biggest ones that general manager Steve Keim is facing with this number 8 overall pick. Does he invest to try to protect his young quarterback Kyler Murray or add an explosive player to the front seven on a defense that allowed more yards than any other team last season? And just looking at the mocks, and I know you said you're not necessarily going off the mocks. I mean, it's all over the place. Some people have the tackle going. Jedrick Wills, the guy you took just a couple of picks ago. Some have Jerry Jeudy, the Alabama wide receiver. I don't think that's necessarily the way to go. I am going with an explosive defensive player, Clemson. He's really a hybrid guy. Isaiah Simmons is the guy that I'm going with. He's played all over the place. He reminds me a little bit, or maybe I should say Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, yep, reminds me a little bit of him. That same kind of mold, versatility. He can play a guy in the slot. He can play linebacker. I don't know that Owusu-Koramoah could go back and play safety, but Isaiah Simmons has. So they're going to get a freaky good athlete on defense with Isaiah Simmons.
And Sean, I saw this over the weekend. Someone broke down his snaps with the Clemson defense last year. His most snaps last year with Clemson was covering the slot receiver.
Wow.
Unbelievable. Absolutely, yeah. Unbelievable. All right, yeah. Our Sports Beat mock draft. Pick number 9, all those Jacksonville Jaguars. They have traded pretty much their whole defense away. They traded Nick Foles to the Chicago Bears. Today they released Marquise Lee, a former second-round pick. Now, he has battled a lot of injuries, but considered their best wide receiver. He was just cut outright today. So they need a lot of stuff. They need a lot of stuff. But
yep,
you need corner, wide receiver, defensive line, edge rusher, offensive line. The list goes on and on and on. Well, Minshew's my quarterback now with Foles gone. I've just let go of Lee. And I believe the best player on the board left in our mock draft is a wide receiver. I believe he is the best wide receiver in the draft. So I am going to have the Jacksonville Jaguars take the best player left on the board, and it fills a need. And there is Jerry Jeudy, the wide receiver from Alabama, one of the best route runners to come out of college in a long, long time. And I just wonder, will he have the type of career that an old Alabama guy did, Julio Jones? He has got some big shoes to fill by that prediction, but I think with the way he runs routes, his explosiveness, he's got a chance to be an all-pro. Maybe tough in Jacksonville, but has that type of ability.
No, absolutely. Absolutely does. That would be a really good pick for them.
It would draw some attention, at least down there in Jacksonville. And the final pick today in our mock draft goes to those poor Cleveland Browns, 6-10 last year, all sorts of adversity. New head coach, what in the world will they do? Offensive tackle, safety, linebacker. Will they trade Odell Beckham? That was a rumor. It's never quiet in Cleveland with the good old Cleveland Browns. So
nope,
there wasn't really a pick that stood out right away with Cleveland. I do think if you're going to give their quarterback a chance to succeed, you better find a guy that can handle business along the offensive line. The only reason I picked other offensive linemen before this guy, there's a thought that maybe Tristan Wirfs from Iowa might end up being like Zach Martin, a guy that can play tackle at a high level but could be an all-pro guard. So Cleveland would have a choice, but I'm going to give them an offensive lineman, and I'm going to say that Tristan Wirfs from Iowa will end up being an offensive tackle, and he goes with pick number 10 in our mock draft. And so we are done with our first 10 picks. We'll do 11 through 15 and 16 through 20 on tomorrow's program. Let's take our final break. 6:54 at 96.1 WSBT and live on the Sports Beat app. Now, restaurantoftheweek.com. This week's Restaurant of the Week is Barnaby's. And you can get Restaurant of the Week certificates, 2 certificates for the price of 1. And you can get 2 $25 gift certificates for the price of 1 at restaurantoftheweek.com. Sports Beat brought to you by Budweiser, locally distributed by United Beverage of South Bend, who urges you to stay home, stay safe, and stay fun. By the Food Bank of Northern Indiana, hunger is a story we can end. Find out how at feedindiana.org. And by Rossini's Pizza, carry out. You're proud to bring home Lincoln Way East in Mishawaka, across from Beeger School. Sean, enjoy your evening. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Sounds like a plan.
Thanks to our producer, Jerry Jadowski. It is 7 o'clock at WSBT South Bend.